you. So, what if... Let's talk about that after the meeting, because I actually wanted a little bit more feedback on that, to be honest, but yeah, yes.
So what I, so I'm Alexi, I founded Datadog last year.
You want the mic or not? I'm sorry.
I think it's fine. I'm assuming everybody can hear me. And so what are we doing, and I'll get into what we're doing, but I really wanted to share some perspective on what are we doing specifically with events and metrics, because I think this is sort of the lifeblood of operations and web operations. That's true. So, I mean, BSD somewhat. I've been using OpenBSD since 2.8, and I particularly enjoyed PF. And I don't need to start in a sort of comparison or some kind of war. One thing that I really enjoyed as well is the quality of the documentation, which I found it sort of a striking difference with, like, here, at least back in the day, the Linux implementation, which was much more organic. You know, I've had experience with Monowall, pfSense, trying to push it where, you know, where the alternative was to buy, like, low-end Cisco stuff. And I to this day, I am still, because I'm a Linux user by, from a practical reason, in the constant state of ZFS envy, because
we have so many great choices with Linux. You have like 45,000 systems to choose from.
Yeah. Right.
That's not the point. Your choices.
So what I want to talk about is what we do, where we started, the kind of data we're dealing with, how we put together, the kind of architecture we put together. So it's going to be a technical presentation. And a few things we learned along the way, specifically around like our use of Amazon Web Services. So at the same time, you know, I don't want to make it like an AWS talk, so, you know, I can just let me know if you, you know, if you want me to speed up some things or actually skip parts. So what do we do? If you go to our website, it's like, okay, GraphShare, Grok, it's a cloud-based services to sort of put together metrics and events from a bunch of different services. So be it your servers or your GitHub or like all the services you're using. Now, so if I try to give a sort of more synthetic view of what it is we're doing, so in a SaaS platform for developer and operations and the developer part, I'll come back to it. But there's really three things. Aggregation of a bunch of data, so data such as discrete events, you know, alerts from nuggets, stuff like that. Aggregation for continuous data, such as the metric stream, you know, how much load there is on my server, like how many sort of uniques I had today. Correlation between different types of metrics, events and metrics, events and events, and then collaboration, which, you know, I'll show you really what that means, but that's really just to make it a lot easier than just shooting email back and forth between developers and operations, or even within the operations team, to explore data. You know, so you have a bunch of graphs, and to really have a conversation in situ where you're having the data. So where we started, and this is like the kind of the mess that I think everybody lives in some kind of variation thereof. So
did you make that?
Yeah, it took a long time.
Okay.
You should, right? So it's, yeah, so let's start with the important part, which are people. So I actually split this in dev and ops, because I think in a lot of shops, they're really split. So then you have like a ginormous amount of complexity around it. A bunch of servers that constantly send signals, say, hey, I'm up, I'm down, or this is my IO weight, or this is, you know, how many pages I've been serving in the past second. You have like, so data coming from your actual applications, your MySQL, you know, I don't know, number of logs currently acquired, your source code repos, your CDNs, your usage and other use, etc., etc. So the idea there is that like you have this, and this is the world we live in, is that you have this very complex, very siloed universe where you have a lot of changes inside choices, and you have to react. And the fact that the development and operations team kind of use different tools and look at different data makes it particularly difficult for them to communicate. I mean, it's not the sole reason why. It's hard, but it's definitely one of the reasons. It doesn't help. So, you know, long story short, we kind of set out to solve this, or to bring our skill to the edifice. So how we started now, more concretely how we started, this is our own Nagos. So we started with, I have a background in software development, but mostly actually in operations in the past like 7 years. And my co-founder is more like a developer. So we started with like, you know what, there's some value in this kind of report, but it's a fucking pain to generate. Knowing when you have alerts, for instance, in the case of Nagos, and what's causing them is super useful, even for software developers. But it's really hard. And in this case, I mean, I'm not picking Nagos because I want to pick on it. It's just that's an example of a tool that's obviously not made to explore data, but that's more made to alert, and that's great. Because if data exploration, if doing analytics and reports were the focus on Nagos, then that would be much better. I mean, another way to look at the same data is this. This is pretty much the same data, but presented differently. So it's super dense. But really, the only thing that stands out is really this. So you don't really have a sense of like linearity of time, but you see, okay, it's bad. It's kind of bad because you have a lot of red. So it's very narrow as well. So it's very precise. You can get a lot of stuff, but it's kind of decoupled from any context. Another thing that you can have is a lot of graphs. So this is, in this case, Ganglia. It's really the same reality, right? The same environment, just a different way of looking at things. So this is our example. The problem with, so when you're in, when you're in ops, you get to use this product, you get to know them, and that's great. You have a little routine, you have five screens, I guess here, Ganglia there. One of the problems that exists is that it is not if you come from a development background, it is not something that's welcoming. By that I mean, so either you actually can't even get on it, or if you want to add your own checks, it's kind of, all right, so I got to ask so and so, and they'll put there. I'll tell them, oh, I want to monitor this and that, and I want the threshold to be this and that, and then when you have time, please do it. So what I'd like to do, if that's cool with you, I'd just give a quick demo of what it is that we're doing, and then sort of continue on sort of some trends and then what we're learning. So what this is, I don't know if you remember the graph. This is from the Nagos part. So this is the incidence of alerts by day, except we're looking from the 29th to the 6th, so it actually starts here and ends there. So let's see if that works. We've sort of revisited, yes, okay, cool. So we've sort of revisited, we've sort of taken the same approach. This is where there should be some music to keep you entertained. Okay. Yeah, awesome. Time to move to my backup plan.
Do you need network? I supposedly have network, but
the wireless.
Oh, is it wireless here as well?
Yeah, SUS 45 or something like that.
Where was I?
I have an IP. Oh, yeah. Cool.
All right. So.
Alright, so what I was showing you is pretty much so this, which, so this is the same data from 629 for the same host to pretty much 77, so to now. So what we're trying to do, which is trying to first unify the two things, this unify the events, like, you know, the alerts, the discrete stuff, and unify the continuous metrics, because usually, you know, when Nagios, for instance, pings you, it means that is not just out of something, it means a, usually, I mean, it can be because a continuous value has reached a threshold, like a metric has reached a certain threshold, and thus you get an alert. So what that translates concretely speaking into is, in our case, you're starting to get, so some kind of discrete metrics lined up, and it's kind of hard to see, but there are like sort of a light shade of thing there. And so you can see here, you know, we filter here. Okay, all right. So, yeah, so we filter, this is not just events that happen specifically for this host. So, like, so in this case, so for instance, well, you can't see, so I'm going to have to wave my hands, but there are sort of light shade of grays which indicate like a density of events. So if you have a super light shade of pink, sorry, if you have super pink reddish, means you have a lot of events happening for this specific host or this specific cluster, and you can just click on it, and it'll you know, tell you, oh, this is you know, these are the actual events you're looking at. Now, that's kind of nice, but so now you have both things at the same time. An extra nice thing that we figured is to be able to have the collaboration right there in situ. So you don't have to wait, let me take a picture, snap, put in an email, or, you know, create a link somehow, send it to whomever knows about what's going on, and you know, we'll try to figure out our correlation. So there, what we figure is, you know, so you can start having this like Twitter style or, you know, Facebook style, however you want to call it, sort of collaboration around specifically around certain kind of metrics. So now, if I scroll down, you know, I have all these graphs for a bunch of different metrics, and so you have to trust me there. There are a bunch of events, the alerts that we got. So I can, right there, you're trying to figure out what caused the alert. So I can see the disk latency, you know, I'll come in, the, I'll talk about it in the, later, but you know, the disk latency shoots up to, and that's the aggregate of like four different volumes, six different volumes. Shoots up to 800, so if you stack them, it's to 800 milliseconds, which, you know, say each disk takes about 150 milliseconds to come back when you do a write, which is what's causing the alert in the first place. Now, interestingly enough, here you see it's kind of a nice show up. You have, you know, a lot of kind of traffic, so because, and I could write that here, I could say, you know, because this, this is Cassandra, this is a Cassandra machine, the repair, so there's an operation called repair, which sort of makes sure that all the nodes are in sync, the repair,
trigger a lot of traffic, which then overflow the IO subsystem. And then, like, so pretty much,
so anybody who's watching this is going to have my face.
And because I really like nice snapshots,
I can say,
yeah, I'll check this out. I'll just say it's a demo.
Alright, so you've seen, so the first thing was sort of, you have the same reality, you know, yeah, metrics and events, put it in the same place, you can really explore one in context of the other.
You're really going for the Facebook kind of work.
Yeah, well, the second thing is more like aggregation and collaboration is what's happening in your environment. And this is really to your point about doing for Facebook, and we're not doing it for Facebook because I really like it. It's mostly the metaphor for presenting new kind of news and radiating news has been there are almost a billion people now who are trained to understand how to interact with this stuff. So the second aspect of what we're trying to do is to really pull a lot of different data from different sources, so from GitHub, Hudson, or Jenkins, Nagios, Kingdom, Pivotal, et cetera. So, and this is coming back to my earlier point, specifically this guy, is that it's kind of a pain if you have to have 20 different browser windows to figure out what's happening. And that's what we've tried to do, is pretty much give you one, you make everything uniform, so make all the events uniform, whether they come from your real user monitoring thing or your source code repo or your Nagios thing or your builds. I've lost my version again. And along the way, you can have try to have a conversation around it. So here, so one of the other guys said, oh, this is weird, 3 a.m., the latency started to fall, to decrease, and what's happening. So what do you have? And he's a developer, I'm sort of more on the ops side, and that's the kind of conversation that we're trying to foster. And that's, at least in my experience and experience of the people I've met so far, it's hard when you're already not looking at the same tools, and when you're not necessarily using the same medium to communicate, even though you're on the same team, you're working the same company, the same goal, et cetera. Let's see.
But yeah. I'm just curious. I mean, more kind of on the thought process of the design of the application. How are you collecting data? I mean, is there plugins for?
Right. So if you think about it, I think the kind of data sources that we see there, so you have your servers, which can be, behind the firewall, etc. So for that, we have a Python agent that will just collect
agent-based stuff.
Yeah.
Your own agent that's doing it. This is all open source?
The agent part is open source at this point. The server side is not. We might do it at some point, mostly, maybe when we think about deploying this kind of stuff inside a firewall, so behind your firewall, so a private version of it. Right now it's not, we have no...
Well, that's free, that's not open source. I mean, it's free behind the firewall.
Yeah. Well, so it could be also open source. So we haven't decided yet. It might be not free as well.
So that's one way to do it. Another way to get data is like you actually connect, if it's to say GitHub or like all the cloud services that you might be using, is you actually connect and hit their API, and then, you know, that's one way to do it. Another way is just we have an API that you REST, a REST API, you curl to it, so you can do your web calls, and then you can send me kind of the same data.
I kind of think where this just becomes another source of noise. So that it's it, may not need to know every alert or hop or
kink
or problem. How do you like filtering the noise that the Zap can use it as well?
So,
it's really very pale. Let's see if I... Alright, so there you have some kind of filter by source, and then filter by like what it is that you want to see. You know, if I want to see everything about Cassandra, or you can create your own tags, and this is my application, and you start tagging your events by application. So that's what we have right now. Though it's not relatively in flux, but there's clearly like you don't want everybody to see it. I mean, you might want everybody to see it. By default, we try to allow everybody to see everything, but realistically speaking, like dev, they don't really care about most modules except when it's for their own application.
Do you ever look for the chapters?
I'm sorry?
Do you ever look for the chapters and make it work?
I do, so that's test number two. Am I able to figure that out?
Based on its history, it's probably not going to get much better than what you got.
Okay. So I mean, I'm kind of done with the demo part. So, you know, I think I have some interesting stuff to share. So. All right, so we've been there.
You've been showing your thing in Chrome instead of Chrome.
It works
with other
It works with Firefox, except that there's like tiny little weird things. But it works with Firefox and with Safari. I don't know, but. So, like now, more specifically, the kind of trends that we've been seeing is, at least in the space, and that's what we do, but also what others do. And among others, there are open source solutions for that. So, really, I think four things is the first thing is to welcome developers to metrics and events. So, what used to be much more the ox, the walled garden. Now it's changing. It's like you want your developers to create metrics, to submit events, because that helps you understand what the hell is going on with your infrastructure.
I would wake them up in the middle of the night and say it's your problem, because then they'll figure it out all on their own.
So you should do that as well.
That's it. It's your problem. It's a dev problem. You stay up at 9 o'clock meeting. Have a nice night. Have one day. So you know what? That's what I wanted to present those to Mr.
Rogers
as
a test. That's a much more political application you're looking for.
But I mean, I think the first, like, because here's how it's going to play. Here's how it might play out. You say, all right, you guys, you're going to be on call. Like, so your developers, you're on call. You're going to say, oh, well, but look, you know, we have no metrics. We don't know what's going on. We don't know your tools. So
fix that. Your developers.
So they'll throw that back at you and say, all right, if you do this and this and this and that, then fine, you will be there. And one of the first things is like you want to allow them to create metrics, create events, have access to it, create dashboards, create graphs, as much as possible. But you know, you're right. Like, now you have the tools, you can understand what's going on. Like, you get the page and you get to fix things when they're broken. And you're absolutely right in the sense that you give a developer. You wake up the developer at 3 a.m. because their app crashed. Like, it's going to get fixed so much faster than if you just you waking up at 3 a.m. say, oh, what the hell, the app crashed again. So, I mean, if you use Graphite, you know, stuff like Graphite for graphing, StatsD for metric collection, there's a lot of that's like really, this is really mostly for developers, almost. The second thing is, context matters, and so one resource example there is Gangria just added event API. And context in this case means putting events on top of graphs, and that's sounds like it's step zero of
putting things in context, but it's already huge. Third sort of trend is start to process large data sets, and that means, so let's say you, by default you'll track like 50 metrics per node. Now you have a cluster of 500, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 nodes, so that's a shitload of metrics. Plus you add all your custom metrics per application. So it starts what used to be handled okay, you know, with a bunch of RDs in whatever CatSci or whichever you want, starts to creak, you know, starts to become not operational anymore. There's just too much data. And behind there's too much data. So the old way to do it is like, okay, fine, you know, I'll ditch data. You know, data that's older than 2 weeks, I'll just forget about it. Or I'll say that the resolution that's lower, and then we'll keep the average or the maximum, you know, whatever. That's not good anymore, really, because you want to get the data, you want to get higher resolution data, you know, kind of as far back as you care. Now the cursor could be, you know, I want high resolution data for the past 3 months, 6 months, a year, but that's where it's going, basically. So it's personal large data. The last thing is being able to explore the data, and that's key, obviously, if you want to do something with this kind of data, with metrics and events. There are some really sweet visualization libraries, I've only picked two right now, in JavaScript, D3 and Proviz, which are designed to like make all interactive graphs and, you know, like nice animations. And that's, you know, I think realistically speaking, it is undervalued because like the tools so far have tend to undervalue the power with which our brain is able to process visual information. And you're looking at a bunch of dry numbers is cool, or in your lines scrolling up is nice, but a nice graph is so much more powerful. So, you know, for the, now, I, you know, the kind of, you know, I wanted to do a little bit of taxonomy of data, and this is, you know, let me know if that's, you know, your, that's of interest to you. I figured we have two things, and behind the taxonomy is also like how it's going to, how it did impact our architecture. So we have events and metrics. So events could be anything like user comments, alerts, you know, dash jobs, etc. And metrics is anything that's kind of continuous. And the premise behind our system, behind actually a lot of other systems, is that this is a workable simplification. This is a simplification that lets you pretty much try to cram a lot of different sources. And you're here, but you put somebody else there, but a lot of different, all that these things do to tell you how they're doing in general can be construed as either events or metrics. And the meta interesting thing is out of events you can generate metrics, so like you can say, how many events did I get per hour, and that becomes a metric, or out of metrics you can generate events, so that's the classical thing of, you know, alerting EFI. If metrics become, you know, second derivative of metric X becomes lower than Y, then suddenly that.
Which events exactly do you take from Jenkins?
We take like builds, so like, you know, each time you, well actually we take builds as well.
And we number of failed tests.
Anything that, so either it works.
Well, but how do you use this information in practice? Because from my experience, the build server, it's a build tool.
Yeah.
In the sense that the developers are constantly watching it, and yeah. I mean, they know what's going on with their build.
Yeah.
So
I mean, the way.
Have some over there.
Yeah, we have. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff we've done, which is like we'll see like this tool this. Like, we'll just say, okay, this job, so Jenkins or Hudson is a job, this is really a job scheduler thing. I just execute this job and tell me if it worked or not. So we'll record it, you know, and then I actually explain, and this is real life example, I explain, all right, this worked, it failed, but actually it worked because, so, you know, I put some context to it. And then, like, really what we're about is, that doesn't work. You'll pretend that this is VPN. It's actually when you click on it, we just bring it to Hudson. We're not going to subsume the whole you know, IT in reverse, we're just going to give you a pointer.
I see. So it's the system, it's more like an aggregator.
Yeah, absolutely. So aggregation is huge. So first we aggregate, then we correlate, you know, this job. So you have like a Jenkins job that does deploy, and then you track in a couple of metrics, and then some night just blows up, and then, you know, it helps you connect the dots in this case. So, you know, it's a job that killed us. All right, so in this pilot, and let me know if this is interesting, I'm going to describe how the kind of system we built to be able to process this kind of data. So feel free to interrupt or those stuff. So in terms of taxonomy of data systems, the one that everybody knows is ACID systems, like SQL databases, and they give you a publicity, consistency, isolation, durability. By and large, what they're good for is tracking money. I mean, it's variations of that, but you know, you withdraw money at the ATM, there's no surprises with your account, bank account. What's great has problems to scale out. It induces a lot of, because of the constraint in terms of consistency and durability and atomicity, particularly, it makes it really difficult to have ginormous systems that are always consistent. It actually makes it impossible. So for another type of data storage, which was not tracking how much money you have in your account, there's this other class of data storage system called Bay, which is cleverly called Bayes. Basically, it involves cascade eventual consistency. And the prime example for that is DNS. So like, DNS kind of always up, by and large. It's eventually consistent. You publish your zone changes, they'll propagate. It'll take a while, but eventually it'll be all kind of consistent. And something I forget what it's for. But anyway, so these are your two basic models. So to treat the large data sets kind of in a real-time fashion for this type of application, you kind of end up with a third type of data system called, which Brian Cantrell has Exxon now joined, I think, called DIRTS, data intensive real time. So data intensive real time is you get ton of data, and real time, it's not like hard real time, embedded hard real time. It's more like the data matter is there. They matter more if they're on time. If you're late, by some definition of late, then the data becomes less interesting. So in our case, where we do a lot of
Where did that term come from? I mean, what's the background on that term, just real quick? Because that just covered like the lightning array of stuff that you're familiar with. That's all. Where did that emerge from?
Yeah, it's just how we defined it. So if you go to the sides are online, so
where one of the D-Trace guys.
Yeah, he's the D-Trace guy. So when I first saw it, he was like,
I know you that name.
Yeah.
You try to get him to do it. He's a boss.
Okay. Yeah, I'll look online, sorry.
Yeah, so
go ahead.
Sorry.
No,
he's in Boston, that guy, isn't he? Yeah, or he was. I don't
recognize his name.
So we have, you aggregate a lot of data, you do a lot of correlation, mostly at this point using visualization. So you use your visual cortex to do the correlation, or also do background data analysis. Collaboration, where you need real-time updates and on-the-fly analysis. So these three aspects, these three things that we're doing, that others are doing as well. What I wanted to show is how they map to systems. So, like for aggregation, you have large data sets, you have constant data, so you kind of want the base system because you don't care so much if you're not fully consistent. Like if you're missing 5 minutes of metrics right now on one of the nodes, it's not the end of the world. Like, other nodes might have it, so in your cluster that collects all the data, it doesn't matter that all the nodes have all the same data at the same time. So base system makes total sense there. You probably want some dirt as well, because one of the things with the base systems like DNS is you, whenever you publish a zone change, it takes a while for the zone to propagate. And so that means that if you ask, hey, give me the data, then you might not get the data back because it hasn't reached the node. So you kind of want to send the data to a, like, eventually consistent, always available system, but also keep the hot stuff always, you know, available. So that's where the dirt part plays. Correlation, so it's mostly base because you're doing, you know, you're doing like doing background analysis, you're doing like, I don't know, statistical analysis and a bunch of data. It doesn't really matter that, you know, it's like you just want to make sure you have the data. You can wait a little bit more. And the collaboration part, it has to be real time, right? Because you're not saying, hey, you know, this, I saw this metric update or this alert. You don't want to get the update from somebody that says, yeah, I know what it is. You don't want to get it 30 minutes after the fact. So what we end up doing is kind of a mix with a little bit of ACID. Crap. All right, so a little more hand waving. Data comes in here. There's the way we structured it, so there's something called intake, and you only see intake, unfortunately. It's written to the Cassandra cluster, so that's the base part. Also written to a Redis cluster, and that's the dirt part. And so that whenever you say, hey, give me the latest data, we'll get there. And then if you're more like, oh, by the way, I want to compute the distribution of, you know, or the 95th percentile of this metric over the entire cluster for the hour, for the past hour, or for the, you know, 2 hours ago, or last month, the entire last month, then it's, you're more, you know, you go through your base system. You know, the last part, you have some ACID. So ACID is really great because it works extremely well, so that's more like the SQL, like the SQL database, extremely robust, well-known, and so on. And it's like the query language is extremely powerful. Like SQL is very compact and efficient and well understood by developers. So when you want to manage your user accounts, your, you know, whatever, this kind of stuff, ACID makes total sense. So if you substitute these, that terminology, this is more like the NoSQL account, that's your SQL, and that's like Memcache, you know, in very, very simplistic way. So, what I wanted then to go into is like how that maps to like real environments, real stuff. And I picked four dimensions for that. So compute, network, storage, and management. And by management, I mean ability to manage the environment. So, well, I mean, you guys all, I mean, I'm assuming you all, you know, familiar with sort of on-premise, which has interesting capabilities. So compute is fast, inelastic, network, really fast, storage, fast, centralized, and then that's your SAN. And then management is typically people-based. You ask things out of people. As opposed to an API, and you have full access to the whole stack. What we did, like, you know, being a startup, like hungry, no money, what we went for is more like the cloud. And it's very different in the sense that, you know, compute is slow, it's very elastic, you know, network is pretty fast, you're distributed. Storage is slow, jittery, maybe durable, has very little memory, and management has great chaos. But so what we found in doing that, and that's one of the things I wanted to share, is from a network's perspective, if you decide to go with AWS or the likes, you'll find that it's kind of simplistic. So you can get some virtual domains, layer 2 domains, you have some crude edge filtering, you have some really crude load balancing, you have DNS, CDN, etc. It's all handled for you. Basically, it works. Storage is a much more interesting story because this is really what you're looking at. So if you start putting your systems across these two dimensions, capacity and latency, so you'll find dirt systems to have a low capacity because they tend to be memory-based, to be real-time, to have predictable response time. So you have like low capacity, super low latency, and as you grow, capacity increases, the latency increases too. And when you go to like multi-tenancy in a public cloud, you end up with this. So like your dirt system have limited memory, so you know you have to work around it. The systems that rely on disk have very jittery disk, and the throughput is rather limited. And then even if you go with object, like the higher level object storage system like S3, where you can store an object in the cloud and kind of manually handle, you end up with like high latency. Yeah.
Can you say what you mean by jittery?
So jittery, absolutely. So jittery is this. Jittery is this. So I can have, you know, sub 10 millisecond access. This is the average weight per device. It's kind of clustered, but it's like all flat, and then you start, then you have like spikes that start up here. So that's what I mean by jittery. Whereas if you, you know, in traditional sense, where you kind of know what kind of workloads you have, you know that, oh, if I have more than, I don't know, 10, 20 milliseconds, something's wrong. There, I mean, you know, you might have 20 milliseconds or 200 milliseconds because it's just there. Or, and that's, we've seen that as well, just because you're pushing too much data through the pipe. And that's, so this is some IO weight, so that's IO stack we've gotten from you know, some volumes where we're kind of getting close to the limit, the one gig limit that you have on network storage. So in general, and for computing it's kind of the same, you'll see like, you know, you'll have a bunch of machines, and then the safety is in the numbers in this case. Like if you have a lot of machines, then you get the central limit theorem will get you to a nice place, but when you have a limited number of resources or machines or disks, you'll see wide swings. And that's something that traditionally when you start, when you design your applications, you don't think about. You're like, okay, you know, fine. The performance will be always, except will be always the same if I always apply the same workload, which is completely false. So, I mean, the one thing about memory is that's more for your system is you don't have a lot of memory. The memory is very cheap. Once you go to like multi-tenant systems, like public clouds, they just they make you pay very, very a lot of money for every single year round. Now you can play some tricks. I mean, you can do, you know, let's do RAID 0, software RAID, RAID 0 with outside backup, but then your volumes are, your throughput is going to be limited by slowest volume. You know, you do like streaming replication, so you start the classical, you know, take one database, you put five slaves, and you read from the slaves and you write to the master. You can do this kind of stuff, you use the thermal volume, so that's more of an AWS specific thing. The trade-off there is like, it becomes really complex. So whenever you have a crash, and it's a pain in the ass to restore, or it takes a long time to restore, you restore a while back. Or you can say, all right, you know what, I'll just use a database service that they provide. And then it's a matter of trust because, you know, they kind of have outages in your screw. So what the lesson we drew from this experience is really like network block storage is the dark side on public clouds. And it is, I think, conceived as bait for enterprise customers. That's the only reason why they have it. Because enterprise applications tend to be, rely on shared storage. I think the reason why that's the case is because it's a hard problem. So having fast, low latency network storage when you have no control over who's doing what, and you want to put as many people as possible on the storage so they can have higher, you know, the margins are not high, so you can make as much money as possible, then you end up in this kind of problem. So, you know, I'd say, you know, don't rely on network block storage on public clouds. You know, if you're in the confine of your data center with the SAN, then you're, you know, the master at home, you do it as you wish. Compute, like what we saw in compute is kind of a story that's also different from what you have in a on-prem data center is that for the most part you can't scale up, and that means you can't really I'll wait 18 months and I'll get a faster machine, because every 12 months or 18 months I get, for the same amount of money, I get a machine that's twice as fast, so 1.2 times as fast. There is like, I have this machine, I'm going to stop with it for the next 3 years, this class of machine, so my only way out is to scale up. So that's just the how it works. The last point that I wanted to make on what we've learned from that experience is that what's really awesome is just having an API for everything. And that's the most transformative part of like public clouds. And like this performance sucks, it's expensive and so on. But I think it is the most disruptive from an organizational standpoint. By that I mean you have companies that move everything to AWS, and they say, part of the things, and they say, all right, now we've outsourced our network management, our storage management, our compute management. It's not perfect. It's fucking hard, but it's going to be easier as the years go by, and there's more and more tools that are built there. And it's just like being in ops for a number of years, I can see how, in the past, doing my own network management, my own storage management is just becoming somewhat obsolete. And now it's more like now just write a couple of lines of code and it'll spawn like a bunch of volumes on a SAN and do a bunch of snapshots and so on. So that's I think that was the biggest transformation as far as we're concerned. That's kind of this the end of the whirlwind tour of what I wanted to say.
I was just thinking, it'd be